Southern Bramble is a Patreon-supported podcast, and we'd like to thank our top-tier patron supporters, sponsors by name, Billy, a witch of the Lower Green Swamp, Josie the Mountain Troll, and Pamela Sterick. Thank you all so very much. Southern Bramble is a Patreon-supported podcast. If you would like to see full, unedited video recordings of our podcast, ask listener questions, or be thanked by name on each episode, please support the show by subscribing at patreon.com/southernbramble.
You're listening to Southern Bramble, a podcast of Crooked Ways. I'm Marshall, the Witch of Southern Light.
And can you imagine those poor Salem witches traveling in covered wagons with nothing but a... Fuck, okay.
No,
I'm
I know.
Austin, main expert.
No, I know exactly what you were doing. Without a charcuterie board or a bidet.
Or a bidet.
A bidet.
Absolutely savage.
Absolutely savage.
I'm Austin, main expert on Instagram. Marshall, how are you today?
I'm doing lovely. Much better than yesterday.
Good. Oh, yeah. Are you feeling better? Do you want to talk about it?
Oh, yeah. I just had like a queasy stomach moment and it was sad face and I just didn't want to sit here and record. You ever have those moments where you're just feeling kind of like off and it's lingering and you sometimes space out, and I was like, would I be good at answering these questions? Would today be a good day?
Let
for
it
this?
Linger. Do you have to let it linger? Me.
Oh my gosh.
Anything when I'm speaking.
How do you know that song? That's a 90s song. You're too young for that. That's giving me middle school dances. This is giving Babysitter's Club.
You know, I was born in the late 90s, but before 99. So by 99, mm-hmm. I was starting to remember things.
You survived the Y2K.
I did. We all did. Did you know that was more of like a hoax than it was like an actual...
Oh, yeah. I mean...
Like actual worry by like... anyone, but I mean, like, there were people who were worried about it because it's like, well, what if? Mm-hmm. But it was more like it was other people making a big deal about it, so therefore it made the public make a big deal about it, but like no one actually thought that was going to be a thing.
It's like a gas. It's like when you hear like, oh, is there a gas shortage, so everyone starts filling up and then there is a gas shortage and you just create it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Or a teepee shortage.
Yes, my favorite.
I absolutely bidet.
Bidet.
Okay, so topic for today. I'm actually really excited to do this. This is a really fun one. We are going to do a Q&A episode. We reached out to y'all on Instagram. I reached out to our Patreon. We wanted to do a whole episode of like, reach out to us and just tell us, what are your questions? What are your thoughts? What do you want to hear us talk about on the show? This was kind of fun because we've done like a live one last year with our Patreon, and it was like a live Zoom just for them. But I thought it was really, really interesting because there were questions that popped up that I just don't come across my practice, and I'd love to hear what you have to say about some of them too. And I just realized, like, as personal as that was, that also would be a great episode to reach out to our entire audience.
I was reading one from Carrie. Hi, Carrie. Thank you. Carrie had said, with obvious thought to what your spirits will or will not let you share, what is your biggest spell
work? Thank you.
Fail. And what did you learn from it differently next time? What is your biggest spell working win? And your lessons learned. What practitioner? Oh, okay. And it goes on, and we can.
We'll do the first two.
Yeah. So, Marshall, do you want to take it away? Let's talk about your failures before you talk about mine.
Oh, I love my failures. Me and my failures. My besties.
She said, "What I learned from my mistakes, and I carry on." Unlike me, I've never had a mistake in my entire life. So
of course not. Of course not. Except for the opening today.
except when she tries to come up with a line on the fly and she can't remember it.
Oh my gosh, that's the first time for everyone, sweetie, darling, darling, sweetie, darling. Okay, so what was your biggest spell working slash fail? Okay, fail, and what did I learn to do differently next time? So I think actually I've had this failure multiple times. One, really not being specific enough or not being broad enough with what my expectations are. Both of those honestly can go hand in hand with each other because when it comes to spell specificity, you can ask for something and you may get your answer exactly as you asked for it, but it comes in a way you're really not expecting it. I did a healing spell once on my bestie, Clevin, and he was having an issue with his ankle. It was in pain. I think he was like, I don't remember spraining it, but maybe I twisted it and I was kind of tipsy when I come. I don't know, who knows? So I did a healing spell for him, and it was like this whole calling a familiar, sending the hair to his house, letting the hair be with him. It was an entire visualization, blah, 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 blah. And what was very interesting to me is it got worse. Like it kind of like the symptoms got way worse. He's like, I've got to go to the doctor. He went to the doctor. He had gout, like full on gout. And what's interesting is on one hand, I don't necessarily actually, I don't consider that one a failure, but it is a great understanding about expectations. And that's the one I want people to think about. That gout was not going to go away on its own. Like it was not going to just magically disappear with no lifestyle changes or understanding or medicine. Like it is going to need medical attention. And sometimes I think when it comes to spell expectations, we think magic looks like it does in the movies where it magically happens. Most of the time, magic works in the most mundane series of steps. His gout is great now because he went to the doctor, because his doctor prescribed him lifestyle changes and a checkup and medicine and things that he cannot continuously consume on a regular basis without inflaming it. That's something to think about. And I've learned now to get more specific, when to maybe decide, you know what, a general healing may not be the best for this. Instead, maybe it's to bring him the resources he needs to get better. I will say one failure was, and it also includes him. I made him a specific anklet that I tied in a may no spells affect him that are not meant to target him spell woven in, because I've done a couple of better business spells at my for my salon at work, and randomly he'll get sick and I'll get all of his clients for a while. So that's
Wow.
kind of one of those again things where like sometimes you don't always think you're thinking you're doing a spell to get better business, and the way that ends up working in real life is someone has an injury that's your coworker, and now you're getting all their clients. Just keep that in mind.
And remembering too that like when you take a job, that means that you took a job and other people didn't. And
Should I
are
do
you
my
gonna
win too, or do you want to do failures first?
You can do your
Oh
win.
my gosh, thank you.
You're
Oh
welcome.
my God. So, I think one of my biggest wins, and I try not to be like egotistical about this because I'm not going to sit here and say like I did this, but it was a really big deal. My mom, with her partner, she's been dating her partner, this guy, for like 3 years now. It's, she's been divorced for five, oh, four, and there was a really scary period of time where he found out he had cancer, and it was my mom had to make some really big decisions, and she was literally getting out of a 38-year marriage, and she was in a relationship with someone she was falling in love with, and she kind of had to make a real tough decision, like am I starting a life with someone that I'm going to lose? Like, do I want to step back now before like I don't know what my future is going to hold with this person, but I love him and I'm going to stand by his side. So she was with him through the procedures to help with his cancer, the medicines that went involved, radiology, the surgery to have it removed. After the surgery, no, before the surgery, leading up to it, I did a 9-day camp. It was like a big one. I was like, this is a big deal. It involves enough attention for the equal proportion of what's going to affect in life. So I did a 9-day candle spell where I chanted something specifically to heal him 9 days in a row, every single night. And then he had a surgery. And after the checkup, they said, hey, I'm sorry, we didn't get it all. We may have to do some more rounds of this. Let's let's just kind of watch it, and we're going to go back in and we're going to do some tests again in about 3 months. So 3 months later, they come back, they do a scan. There is no signs whatsoever of cancer cells. Like, every what they thought they missed was just nowhere to be seen again. So again, I'm not sitting here saying like, ooh, I made that happen, big head Marshall. But I am thinking that's really strange. I thought I failed at the spell because they said they didn't get it all. Only for 3 months later, when they go back and check up on it to see if they need to go forward, and the cancer's gone.
It regressed.
Totally in remission.
I think too, like, there was a really good... God, I can't even remember who said it. So sorry if I'm quoting you and you hear this and you're like, hey, that was me. Mm-hmm. But there was like, while magic is not quantifiable, like the way that we quantify it is through the outcomes that we get and through like the synchronicities we get. So there is like a gauge of measure, even if it's not scientifically like replicatable, but like the way that we quantify like, is our magic working, is through like synchronicity essentially. And like, if the thing happened and you wanted it to happen, then congrats, it happened, or like congrats, it worked. So I think it's a good way to look at it.
I agree. Tell me about your failures. I knew a guy named Gage once. He was cute. What about your failures? Tell me more.
Well, again, as I've never had any, no, I won't be that unfun, but, you know, a girl doesn't reveal her secrets, too much. But one thing that, I will say is that like a lot of the times when just like a conjuration doesn't work, or when nothing shows up, and that can feel very, frustrating, especially for me as like, I am a pretty, like good conjurer in my opinion. Like I think like what my I'm very efficacious in what I do, but like one thing especially that is very important to do is like if a spirit doesn't show up, and it's because there are certain requirements that aren't being met, like prerequisites for a lot of the solar spirits. Like I have a hard time getting solar spirits to show up if I don't have everything very
yellow,
looking a certain yes, and also like making sure my house is very clean, and like weirdly cleaner than normal.
The lemon pledge,
absolutely. And or also while having like the first pentacle of the sun is, or maybe it's the second, is very important to like get a spirit to turn up, a solar spirit, for me at least. Whereas the other planetary spirits seem a little more chill about it.
I want to ask,
has happened to me personally.
I do want to ask this because it actually connects to a question that's much, much later, but I think like it might, kind of want to bring this up now for the moment. When you say does or doesn't show up, what does that look like for you? Or feel like, because people ask, like, when you say a spirit speaks to you, what the fuck do you mean by that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think when a spirit shows up, it's like it can appear in a multitude of different ways. And everybody's way is going to look different, and it's going to be dependent on each time. So sometimes I'll get flashes of imagery. I know that like the way that I receive a lot of spiritual communication is very like through the body. So
okay.
Actually, like I shake a lot. Like if you, which how could you, but like if you've seen me during conjurations or even sessions where I'm like in a group of people and we're all doing something, like I'll sit there and I'll like shiver like a dog shit in razor blades, you know, like I'll be, and I'm not like cold at all, but my teeth will chatter, my hands will be like visceral, like, you know, all over the place shaking. It's pretty bad, like no doctor, no surgery for me. Like for me, it can show up very embodied in that way. It can also be a little bit more chill. It depends on like what we're doing. I sometimes will see, like I'll see the spirit, not like more so in my mind's eye. I do also like, it's very rare for me to get like apparition. maybe like maybe once or twice that I can count on my hand, but I'll also like feel things breathing on my neck, or like just the knowing that there is like a presence in the room, and that's usually when I'll like look behind me or something like that. The bits of paranoia that come in. One of my favorite ways, I don't remember who said it, but like there's a basically a grimoire that kind of quotes this is like, you will know a spirit's there because you will suddenly be afraid. And I'm like, yeah, no, that's tea. I quite like that that idea. And maybe not so much afraid, but like definitely knowing that the there is a presence in the room. So it can appear in a myriad of different ways. Like I will get messages, I'll get images. Yeah. How about you?
Oh, no, I was just curious. For me, I do feel like it feels like thoughts that aren't my own. I have never necessarily like seen something that stood out to me as like, oh wow, there is a literal apparition in front of me. That's never been my experience. It is very much a feeling that isn't my own. And a lot of times I also don't do as much grimoire work as prescribed historically that you do, as much as more the folk, more quote unquote folk magic. To be perfectly honest, I actually like the term low magic, but it seems to be very out of vogue right now. So I'll just say, that. What about your wins? Tell me more about what was your biggest spell working win, if you can.
So many,
Oh my gosh. Look at you on your pile of wins.
I know my pile of
So
wins,
high up there.
which cannot be surmounted by a pile of failures. I don't know. I don't like to brag too much, you
And you know
know.
what? Good for you, girl.
Thank you. I
Good
like
for
to be
you.
humble.
Look, you're so humble
I am so
on
humble.
that
Humble
pedestal.
pie. Right.
Freshly
What?
baked.
Well, freshly baked.
Yeah. Okay, so this is an interesting one that I like. What practitioners inspire you from the past and today? The practitioners that inspired me in the past don't really inspire me today, which is very interesting.
She said, I don't like looking at the past. I only look to the future.
obviously, my most influential, I think, person in the craft today was probably Gemma Gary. It was a very big jumping off point that put me in this direction. Yeah, I would say Gemma Gary is probably one of my biggest influences now as a person. Historically,
And if you don't have one, it's
yeah.
okay.
I mean, when I was younger, I mean, it's very easy for me to sit here and say like Scott Cunningham and Silver Ravenwolf. Scott Cunningham still has deep claws into my practice, into my connection with herbalism, incenses, oils, like I think similarly with your experience. I do not derive inspiration from Silver anymore, but I'm deeply grateful for what she and her work contributed when I was much, much, much younger, because it was desperately needed at the time. What about you?
Yeah, I will say I'm very, I mean, there's too many people to name off the cuff. Like obviously, we wouldn't be where we are
How about King
with
Solomon? There you
King
go.
Sol. Yes,
Sure.
absolutely. Also, Agrippa,
Definitely.
S.L. MacGregor Mathers for his, despite being not always the best translations, perhaps the most influential. So many people, every person who's come before us, especially if the people that I'm working with directly, and yet at the same time, to not be so bogged down by figures in books. I'm really appreciative for the teachers that I've had along the way and the people who teach me and have taught me and continue to teach me, like in personal settings, some who are living and some who are not living.
Absolutely. I'm kind of really inspired by this. So one of the things that we know about certain historical grimoires, or at least that's purported, is that it was written by some sort of secretive monk society, or like, you know, a monk that secretly practices the dark arts. I have to admit, I actually find that very inspirational, this idea of
the clerical underground.
The clerical underground, this heretical secret person who has decided to author you know, the Red Dragon over one single night in prison for right before he was executed. Like, I feel like whether that actually happened or not, because I think folklore and the stories that get passed along orally or written down throughout the centuries are just as influential as living, breathing people, the same way that I think like the characters and the stories I write are influential to the magic that I create from it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, the pseudepigraphical text, like Solomon probably wasn't Solomon, but thank God for it.
Truly. And or even like, you know, sixth and seventh book of Moses. Like, I'm sorry, Moses did not write this, but at the same time, you know, like people use it to find treasure. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they found any, but.
And if it works, it works.
If it works, it works. Is there a new to you type of genre or magical working that you'd like to explore? Honestly, at this point in time, I'm really happy exploring the magic that I'm kind of building through my own writing. Like, my own artistry is the thing that I'm exploring the most right now. And I think where I used to seek it from outside figures, I'm now seeking it within my own exploration.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yes, things that I can't talk about, mm-hmm. but also, I don't know, I feel like I'm...
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, like, I don't like, there are certain things that I see and I'm just like, I have no interest. Like, I have no interest in this, so I'm not interested. So even if I were to discover or play with new magics, I would do it out of disinterest.
A lot of the things that I'm working on right now is based off of exploratory work, and mm-hmm. that has informed or turned into practical knowledge.
Yeah.
Sign up for my class, The Infernal Menagerie, Witchcraft with Fantastical Spirits of Earth, Sky, and Sea, which you can find on BaneXBramble.com. Things like that, where we're not even just within the class, but like things I've done in the past and has informed it, what I've done now, like mm-hmm. Work with journeying and spirit flight and seership and conjuration, mm-hmm. even things that are not necessarily like spirits of the other, that aren't necessarily demons nor fairies nor humans or plants or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do we go from there? And I think that stuff can be really cool, and exploration into like the intersection of like technology and stuff like that can be really great. I've really come to appreciate, especially with this class that I'm doing Electron, is the sigil engine. Like, it's a really useful tool.
Electronic sigil engine, the one online.
Yeah, that was made by Darig, and you know, the one that like you type in a thing and then it makes a like the cool.
Yes, I have it in the link in my bio.
Yeah, it's a useful technique.
It is,
especially if you're trying to conjure a spirit that doesn't necessarily have a list of sigils or something like that, and you can mm-hmm. just type it in really quick and give it a candle, and you know, build your own Barbie or something like that. Mm-hmm. I think that stuff is really cool.
I love that, because I guess I was about to say, like, I was thinking after you were saying that, if there was one thing that is really a huge part of my exploration that I think isn't as obvious, I had this discussion with Ivy the occultist. I had this discussion with her in an interview on YouTube where she was talking about like a lot of my book being making her feel like it's tapping into chaos magic a lot, because of the way it is kind of spirit building, as if they're kind of like servitors, if you will, mm-hmm. or as if the sigils created by the stories of these characters existing build an energy around what they can, how they can be interacted with, and what their virtues are, and what goes into the magic that makes them exist And I find that really interesting. And I never considered when I was writing it that it was a version of chaos magic, but it really kind of became that. And the more I'm writing my next book now, because it dives into something more particular, it really has become an interactive spirit slash servitor that feels like, and I don't even like servitor because it feels like it's just created to serve, and that's not quite what I mean. So I just like the term inspirited or spirit, but it
I don't
is
think that's a bad
very
word.
much that.
For sure.
If you could only have, or if you could only own one book, what would it be and why?
That's a good question. The Holy Bible.
Good night, Moon.
Okay.
Talk
Do you want to say
about
why?
I was gonna say talk about animism for 3-year-olds. Honestly,
That's the,
I was just actually throwing out one of the earliest stories that I actually do think connects back to how we interact with everything around us. Do I actually want to say that that's the one I choose? Probably not really. If I were to choose one, the Bible, really interesting. Actually, that's not after our last discussion. But if there were one book that I would probably choose, honestly, at this point, it'd be mine. It'd be the one that I wrote.
Work. I also like the Good Night Moon. Harold and the Purple Crayon though was my shit when I was a kid. You mean to tell me you built an entire world for yourself?
Truly.
I loved that one.
Okay, so last question from Carrie. If you could use only one plant or herb ally from now on, what would it be and why?
Roses, I think,
Roses.
is the obvious answer.
Mine would be Datura.
Work.
Well, you know, we've talked about this before because I don't see, and you've talked about the versatility of roses as well. But I think a lot of people think, oh, it's poisonous, bam, baneful. There are a lot of things that are, you know what, this lamp, if I ate it, would also kill me. So, like, a lot of things can kill you or plants that are not edible. That doesn't make them necessarily baneful. They can be. I actually find, and I do think of Datura as a lady, I find Datura to be very manipulative. And magic being the literal manipulation of energy, manipulation of circumstances, I think like Datura can be a very, very wise manipulator when it comes to twisting a reality that you want to create around you.
I agree. Yeah, that's a really good, I really like that
My
answer.
gosh, thank you.
You're welcome. So Giles has asked, it's not really a specific question, but they would love to hear our thoughts and opinions on cultural appropriation versus cultural exchange. And if you've had, or we've had the opportunity to interview so many incredible authors from a wide range of backgrounds and disciplines, and they would love to know our thoughts on navigating the balance of being responsible and respectful while also incorporating new practices. For me, I think that it's complicated, it's tricky, there's no right answer. Please don't let the internet tell you there is one. I think that it's a good point to always defer to, like, if you're showing up to a culture or you're interested culturally in something, but you are not a part of that culture, then it is important to show up to people who are within that, who are immersed in the culture, who are trained, who do have license within the culture. And oftentimes this will be elders, this will be just actual people who live in settings and community spaces in like the places where you go and you show up and you just show up and you're gonna probably be a guest for a long time. And I'm speaking specifically within like magical practices, but we have to remember that like magical practices are not devoid of their cultural backgrounds. So it can get very, like, if you're going into something that is spoken in a different language or something like that, then why not? Why are you not trying to learn that language? Why are you not trying to visit that place at least once where it comes from, or at least know people who are in that cultural background, not only so that you can learn from them, which sure is important, but it shouldn't just be quid pro quo, but also for the fact that like culture is complicated. You will always be a guest. you will always, you'll never, I guess unless you're like completely immersed in it, like you're not going to learn how to be from a different place or a different country or a different cultural background or a different lineage. It's just not possible. And yet, like to go into a place and be humble and respectful, is important. So I guess all of that is to say, respect has to be given. Understand when you're told no, and you have to deal with that. And and it's complicated. And defer to people who actually are part of that, and not just what you think and what you feel.
Oh, absolutely. I'm a huge cultural appreciator. I love learning about other cultures directly from the people who are willing to take the time to put in the labor to share that, without me having to ask someone randomly to put in that labor. I think that's actually a really big sign right there when you're crossing that line, asking someone who has not volunteered that labor to educate you on something instead of seeking out people who have put the time in, because people do put that time in, about teaching about these cultures. And I think one of the biggest things that comes down to me is profit. I think I'm not following you home. I don't know what you're doing behind closed doors. And when it comes to cultural appropriation, I think one of the biggest problems is the erasure of the culture whose voice that is by people speaking on it who are not part of that culture. So you have to understand that if you honestly are just like a this white person, learning, having a whole page where you are, being a hoodoo priestess, where you are doing hoodoo spells, where you are teaching hoodoo magics, where you are writing hoodoo books, where you are profiting off of this. This is just my opinion, of course. Now you're taking what any sort of profit that someone whose culture would be bringing in, you're taking that from them. So that was something that stood out to me a lot when I began to understand that, like, I love learning about hoodoo from people who would share it. I love the episode learning about Kimbala. I love learning about all of these different types of magical practices. And some of them are totally open and ready to grab and take. There's a lot of them that are open, ready to grab and take. But when something is considered and known to be a closed practice, and then you go out of your way to profit off of sharing that information that has been shared with you, I think that breaks those boundaries from appreciation to appropriation. I think Lilith Dorsey said something once about a practitioner who went down to Haiti who wrote about these specific rituals that were magical practices, but was very, very careful to write about the experience as an outsider learning about them and not giving you, this is what they did. Here was the recipe. Here was what this person did, and basically spilling the beans. Then some white dude came down there, did exactly that. And that's how you get Serpent in the Rainbow. So I do think that there is a level of, and this is where like I believe in gatekeeping actually being a good and important thing. There are certain cultures who get very, very gatekeepy about their practices because historically, people who are not part of that culture will come in and take it and then profit off of it and capitalize off of it. And then, sometimes that starts to diminish that actual practice. They don't have the same resources. People who made a living doing that practice now are going to Suzy Q down the road. Who's following Hoodoo Delish? I don't know. Like, I feel like there is definitely a level of safety to appreciate without saying, this is mine now, and I'm going to profit off of it. That's just a big one for me.
Moving on from Giles' question, I was we have Billy, and Billy asks, how do you incorporate modern folklore into your craft? An example, creepypasta, Slenderman, Hat Man, etc. And do you have any advice on setting up a cosmology slash spirit court? Do you incorporate any contemporary folklore, or like internet lore?
Well, to be perfectly honest, that's actually where a huge portion of my Wheel of the Year comes from. Modern folklore is how we build a lot of our holidays, is how we build not even just holidays, but like social structures of different times of the year. So like I know this is kind of silly, but for me, Girl Scout cookie season is on my Wheel of the Year. Like there is a time of year that all of a sudden these, little monsters show up at every grocery store. They're sending their parents to work with all these sign-up sheets, and all of us are powerless to not get these Girl Scout cookies during swimsuit season. Like we're like leading up to this time that this like monster come and like tempts us, and we all give in, and I love it. But I was thinking about that the other day as they started popping up, which seemed early actually in January. They started popping up my local grocery store, and I was just like, Girl Scout cookie season is like my wheel of the year. And the way that I think about lived experiences that many of us have as kind of contributing to that. When it comes to like creepypasta stuff, not quite as much. And in fact, I see a big delineation between the pop culture hat man and like the man in black figure that I associate my symbology with. Does that make sense? Because I feel like the
For
hat
sure.
man is like a very, it's more of like an urban legend sort of thing that pops up. That's for, I feel like it's almost, it's like cousins with the sleep paralysis demon.
I agree. I think Hat Man is a funny one. But I will also say, these things have actual impact on us, and I think
They do.
too. The way that these things can be relatable for a lot of people, even if it's like memeified in a way, because like I honestly think that the Hat Man is kind of it's a joke. Like it's funny. I mean, maybe that's not where it comes from, but like it has been memeified. And so do you
So has
remember?
sleep paralysis demon.
And so has sleep paralysis demon. I just saw this amazing reel that which I can't describe, but it was truly amazing. I'll post it when this episode gets posted. I'll rehash it and say this is what it was. It was really good. But I think that for me personally, I don't incorporate potentially like any creepypasta stuff. I know, however, Corey Thomas Hutchison, I think, has talked about it, not even necessarily like his own personal experience, but I think that's where some of his like work stuff comes in, is like his academic background is contemporary, maybe not quite folklore, but like internet lore, which can turn into folklore. So I think that's really, really interesting stuff. And in terms of how to build a spirit court, I feel like that's hard to answer for me personally, because it's like, A, there's a like, what, where are you coming from in terms of background, in terms of cosmology, which I think it's important to also kind of either start there, either building one or having a background in one, which you probably do, and so build off of that. I think for most people, like in the witchcraft world, it's very easy to gravitate towards the structures that are already placed for us. This can look like the seven planets, the four elements, the four humors, and kind of going from there. It can be very close to home, very landscape based. Like what can you see out your front door? Whether that's buildings or trees or certain plants or certain animals. So it's a complicated question for me to answer, at least. Marshall, do you have any maybe better insight than I do?
I actually love the term spiritual court. I'm not going to say that I made it up, but I felt like I grasped those words a while ago because I didn't quite understand how to describe the collection of spirits in the way that it had a sort of a hierarchy with, which I'm fine actually explaining now. I kind of identify with like the Witch King and Queen, as being different expressions of solid and then non-solid, or tangible and intangible. And I kind of hold them in a court system here, and then the four familiars kind of surrounding slash below, if that makes sense. And this is actually very much inspired by Gemma Gary's book, Traditional Witchcraft, A Book of Cornish Ways, with the snake, the hare, the toad, and the crow. That's become a really, like, the king and queen, the snake, the hare, and the toad, and the crow. That is what I consider to be my court. But since we're getting into personal folklore, and I've talked about that a little bit when it comes to my book, the spirits in my books have also started to join this court. So you have the three wise healers, you have the mother in red, the mother in green, the mother in black. You have the seven holy siblings. So for me, this kind of collection of spirits that I am building different types of connections and relationships with have slowly kind of built what becomes my, I hate to use the word astral because it sounds so, manifesty, but I kind of think of it as like my astral temple. And one of the things that deeply inspired this understanding was years ago when I took, I don't want to give too many details away, but when I took Jason Miller's Hecate class, there was a, one of the, I just want to make sure that I'm not giving too much away, but there was an understanding that you're not just going to be working with Hecate, you're working with the horde that comes with her. And that involves all of the children of the connections to the sentinels of her temple. So you got the Gorgons, you got the Graces, you got the Greys, you got the Mighty Dead, you have the winds, you have the rivers. So all of these things come together to build that court of a Hecatean witch, which I really appreciated. But I ultimately kind of stuck with more of like the traditional and folkloric sense. So for me, that's kind of how I got to the point where I have what I consider my spirit court and the relationships that I build with them.
I think that's perfect.
Oh, thank you. Oh, let's see. So Josie has a question. What is the best lesson you have learned from witchcraft in general? And when did it click and set a fire under your ass? Ooh, hot.
When did it click? I don't know. I feel like... Because for me, I think that especially people who are in I think especially people who are in like a white secular Protestant society culturally, like there's especially in America, complicated America, I think within the context of like removing ourselves from secularism or trying to deprogram secularism is like kind of a constant stage of becoming. And yet at the same time, like I just got this question last night in another Q&A that I did where it was like, what, like, when did you become like a witch? And it's like, I honestly like, okay, can I give like a plain answer? Like, okay, when I was 11, sure. When I did like a first, like a formal initiation kind of thing. Yes. But like, I don't, first of all, that's very dissemblant from like what my practice looks like now. I was going off of what I could find on the internet. I was going off of a lot of Scott Cunningham stuff. Could it be, more of the folk stuff when Aaron Oberon wrote their book, sure. Besom, Sting, and Sword, sure. Could it be before that when I had all these dreams as a kid about things torturing me in my sleep? Yes. Or when a psychic told me at a really young age that like I was made to do magic? Sure. So it's like always this path of, I think, becoming. And so for me, it's hard to say like, oh, it's, this is when something clicked for me, because it's a process. What about you?
I've never had, no, that's not true. No, I had a moment a while ago where I want to get too deep into it, but when I was fostering and my first foster daughter ended up going over to live with another family who then informed me that the system had put her back with her mother, and knowing their history, and I did a spell, and again, I won't get too deep into the details of it at the time, but it was a deep, intense moment of fear, desperation for this child that I had fallen in love with, that I knew I couldn't be a parent to, but I knew where she would and wouldn't be safe. And so I did a spell to bring her to safety. And within a month and a half, she was back with the family. And I was so, so grateful for that moment. And it was just like, that was the fire under my ass to, I had no recourse. Like there's no legal route. There's no, there's nothing I could do. It was that moment of absolute desperation. And when it happened, I was so, so, so happy that it happened. And, it was one of those things where I learned some of the importance. That's not true. I was going to say of needing emotion, but I mean, you can do things pretty emotionless and still do folk magic really easily that way. But that was my kind of set a finer under my ass moment. What is the best lesson that I've learned from witchcraft in general? It looks different from person to person. The experience of spirit relationship is extremely personal. And yes, there is devil in the craft. That's it. And there you have it. Ooh, what's Jason say? Jason says, what's your feelings and thoughts on covens, circles, and groves? And what are your thoughts on demon possession? Okay. Sure.
What do you think about covens and groves?
Personally, I do not see myself committing to like a monthly circle that I'm going to drive to. Literally, I have a weekly supper club, but a monthly circle would be too much to bear. Like, right. like if I had a close group of friends that didn't live too far and we wanted to like do something together, I think I could. I don't have that. This would need to be a very like close group of people that I have deep trust in. And while I'd love and trust my friends, they're not interested in magic. And even when I've done magic around some of them, I feel very removed from my comfort zone. So for me, I'm just not interested in much of a coven atmosphere. You want to answer that and then we'll talk about demons?
Yeah. So I have been in coven structures where we leave everything and we come back to it, or mm-hmm. like we leave our own personal practices behind. And so that's how we kind of enter in the coven. And it's similarly to the coven of Shani Oates, at least on paper, is like we come back to the spirit that centralizes the coven. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, that is what it is. But in terms of like other groups, I think it takes time to find people who you trust, who share the same values as you do. Groups are hard. And honestly, I would not be a part of a group if I hadn't found like a centralized tradition to be a part of, if that makes sense.
Does. Absolutely. No, I think I would agree with you on that. When it comes to demon possession, okay.
What do you think?
So I think that The Exorcist and anything of the same ilk when it comes to horror movies and shows has really put a very fun twist on what it actually means to be possessed by a demon.
And by twist, we mean that rubbery neck sound that happens when they twisted the piece of leather in the microphone to make what's-her-name's head spin.
Yes, exactly like that. I don't have a lot to say about demon possession because out of all the people I know who've worked with demonology, demonolatry, summoning of, working with, like a lot of them that I know will actually refer to, like if you're specifically talking about the 72 demons of the Lesser Key of Solomon, a lot of them refer to them as spirits because they, I think it's just a little overplayed, it's not the right word either. I think a lot of it is very theatrical that we think it is than it actually is in real life. And every single person I've talked to who has worked within demonolatry or Solomonic magic of summoning demons, a lot of them say it doesn't necessarily look the same way you think it would. And as far as I know, none of them have ever voiced any fear of being possessed. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to counter the question, hopefully not too combatively. Hi, Jason, by the way. Thank you for your question. It's kind of like, what do you think about demon possession? And I'm like, well, it happens. I mean, but at the same time, it's you know, I think that there's a lot of room for it's complicated and it's a large subject, and it's like, what happens when it's in a controlled environment? What happens when it's meant to happen? Mm-hmm. What happens when it's not meant to happen? And also too, when does it turn into clerical and familial abuse? Like what the Exorcist movie is based off of is, it has been demonstrated oftentimes that it is a psychosis, and whether that is brought on by a spirit psychosis, which it absolutely could be, or when it isn't, and how do these things affect each other? I think it does happen. I know it happens. I've seen it happen, and yet I think that is definitely in more controlled environments. So, you know, it's whatever, but yeah, I don't have any more opinion on it besides like, it happens, and also know how to deal with it, I guess, if that's not what you want to have happen. But there are, I think, especially in like Western esotericism, there is a emphasis on possession as being something very bad, or mm-hmm. something that we don't want to happen, or something that we are very afraid of happening mm-hmm. and so it's somewhat fetishized and sensationalized. And in other spiritual cosmologies and other spiritual systems, it just kind of is a thing that happens.
That's literally invocation. When you invoke, you're taking it into yourself, you're becoming one with it. At least that's my interpretation of invoking versus evoking. But like, I've heard other practitioners say it's just another form of possession.
Right, and I would agree to an extent, but like I would say that the way that people are in different cosmologies are viewing this, or not even viewing it, but like how it happens is very, very different and very interesting and very it's its own thing. And mm-hmm. It just kind of is, and I don't know.
Yeah, I've never come across it in a way where I'm thinking like we need to call a priest.
And usually in most of these spiritual systems, you wouldn't need to anyways, because exactly. there's training in place for these things to occur. So
yeah, exactly. Okay, so here's a good question. This is an interesting one. How can public witches help folks navigate the bad players and frauds in the industry?
I think that would mean that more public witches would have to be less fraudulent. I also know the person who asked this question, and I love them dearly.
No, I very much do as well.
That would mean that less people would have to be fraudulent themselves. I don't know. And I don't think that we're ever going to get past a point of spiritual grifters. I don't think we're ever going to get past a point of scams and scammers and psychics. And I think it's only going to be worse, because we have more of an avenue, of an easier platform to allow people to present themselves as authoritative. When they have no authority, you know, what do you think, Marshall?
You know, I think, because I 100% agree with you, for as long as spirituality existed, there have been scammers within spirituality. That's just a straight up fact throughout time. And within any industry where scammers can make a profit, they will exist. What really stands out to me is the bad players and frauds part I want to talk about here. One of the things that I might consider is if we're talking about like an online situation, when you go to their comment section, and they have a lot. Do you ever read them? Do you ever read the responses? One of the things that I think about a lot of times is even when I want to be catty and a bitch and say something really, really like stupid or short-tempered back, I a lot of times will take a second and think, I want to also make sure that my page exists in a place. I don't want to say my page is a professional page, but exists in a place of professionalism. I want to make sure that no one ever feels like their questions are dumb. I want to make sure no one ever experiences a feeling of walking away from my page, unless they're just straight up ignorant or racist or a TERF or whatever. I don't want anyone to walk my page personally feeling degraded, lesser than, or put down in any way, shape, or form. So when it comes to maybe not necessarily scammers or frauds, but maybe just kind of like the bad players, people who prey on other people, people who use situations to shame so excessively. I've seen big creators who use their platforms to basically tear down other people constantly. And personally, I think that's what I would absolutely call a bad player. Look at their content. Don't just look at their content, look at their comments. Go to their Twitter history, go to their thread history. How do they respond to people who disagree with them? How you handle someone who disagrees with you, I think, is a huge indicator to who you are personally. And as fun as it can be to have a witty retort, sometimes when I would prefer. Sometimes I would just prefer to walk away or more so de-escalate a situation than feed into it for the sake of, I don't know, feeding into it. And
for
I think
for the gag, just for the
yeah,
gag.
For the just for the gag. Yes, gags are fun. I love a good gag. But...
Me too. I can, you know, catch me on a bad day. I will subtweet you.
No,
sometimes I won't even subtweet you. Sometimes I'll just.
I subtweet, don't get me wrong. I am down for a subtweet. I mean people who literally spend all their time.
All day, I know. And it's really pathetic. I will say, because I didn't read the question correctly. but I think too what helps reduce or like how to navigate scammers is exactly what you said, Marshall. Like pay attention to what they're doing. I would say an overall caution with people who are trying to sell you spirituality.
That's
and that
big
goes
one.
And that comes from somebody who does, you know. I do sell my services, I do sell my wares, and I can only speak to what I do on them. Right. And yet at the same time, I think like a general wariness of people in a spiritual something that's trying to sell you something can be really beneficial. I also think too, this is where like having a common sense, but also be like a good set of teachers, a good set of ways that to like to navigate people in general. And like you said, checking comments, checking especially people with like a cult of personality built around them. Like so many influencers and people with a large following who are in the witchcraft sphere have a tendency to do. So be cautious, I guess. And also too, if you do get scammed, or if find out much later that somebody that you really trusted and have brought into your life and kind of elevated to your friends and shown them to your community and invited them in, and they turn out not what you thought it was, or the relationship turned out not what you thought it was. You don't have to feel guilty about that forever. You know, like you shouldn't beat yourself up too hard about that. People will show you who they are in time. It's just if you let it happen or you continue to let it happen, that's when it becomes a problem.
Absolutely.
But.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest things is I am a skeptical witch. I go into everything with a little bit of skepticism. I think a healthy amount of skepticism is a great way to just not have your guard up, but to just in general filter through a level of intentional reality, if that makes sense. Because I think some people are intentionally removed from reality. especially the further down the new age, you know, law of attraction direction they go. But anyways.
And speaking of that,
Yes.
somebody has asked tips for finding our IRL community as a solo witch, but also IDing coded love and light people. I get what you mean by the question, but also I think, and this is coming from somebody who's also been very like cautious of being like, you know, careful of the love and light people. But just remember that just because somebody sees something in a different worldview or uses different language than you do doesn't make them a bad person. And if you're shutting down communication just because you didn't like particular words that they use, and you know, I have words that I've been openly public about, like this is it's like a yellow flag word for me. I'm like it's something where I'm like I'm gonna keep that in mind, and you know, I will pay attention to the behavior of somebody over a period of time, but like I'm not gonna, I try not to be in a position where like I'm just shutting down communication, especially in real life situations or in situations between me and a client or something like that, just because they use different language than I do, or a different word choice, or even a different, you know, spiritual cosmology than me. I think honestly, like, is there a lot of bullshit in New Age spaces? Absolutely. But there's also a lot of bullshit in witchcraft spaces too. Is there any, like, what is the difference between glossolalia and speaking in tongues in a church? You know, there isn't. Does that mean I think that performative light language is valid? Eh. But you know, that's, you just have to be able to have a conversation with real people. I will say, how do you find in real life connection? It's difficult, and I don't have a right way to do it. Because I mean, sometimes going to, if you can find witchcraft meetups and spaces, it can be really helpful, but a lot of the times those only exist in larger cities.
If you are in a
Sometimes.
city with like a shop or a metaphysical store, sometimes they'll run classes. You could
Yeah.
sign up for one. They're usually not super expensive, and you can meet other people there.
And also too, even if it's a class that is like, it's not even something that I'm that interested in. Instead of viewing it as, first of all, there might be something that you glean from it that you didn't think of, but also too, think of that as an investment into social networking instead of just, wow, this class sounds dumb or is something that I'm not interested in.
Get on some mailers. I promise you, there are events hosted, there are book signings hosted, there are markets, depending on. I know in one of the cities that's nearby me, there is a metaphysical shop, and they have a monthly market. Like just straight up a witchy monthly market, and it's wonderful for networking. People come from all around the state to literally just from that city. It's a great opportunity. So check those out. This one's interesting. How do you feel about spells in the workplace?
Do it.
Yeah, I literally have a it's not this one, obviously. I have a necklace with citrine on it that I've charmed to make my guests feel deeply appreciative of my work, and that they have a deep desire to make sure that I am well compensated.
Good. Yeah,
So
I love
I call
that.
it my big tips necklace.
Good.
Yeah, and I literally I wear it to work every single day.
Big
And since
tips, big
big
tits.
tit, that's right. And I'm telling you, I have gotten some $100 bills from clients I have never gotten $100 bills from since I made that necklace. So I am down for some cash tips.
Yeah, if your witchcraft, if your magic, I should say, isn't helping, like your magic should be impacting your business. Like, what's the point of all of this if
Yeah.
it's not doing that?
Go to New Orleans. Every single shop that is a business in general will have a huge chunk of citrine somewhere near the entrance or somewhere in that business, solely for the fact that it's understood as a business builder. Prosperity stone.
I love that.
Here's one for you in Florida. Do you have any recommendations for books or other practitioners on folklore and land spirits of Florida? Florida.
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 I'll say right off the bat, Erin Oberon's Southern Cunning, folkloric witchcraft of the American South, because Aaron is my personal friend, but also, it is genuinely a good book. It is a screenshot into a time of Aaron's practice, and it should be treated as such. But I also think too, it is very difficult to, like, you're not going to find specifically a thing on Florida spirits. You can oftentimes find a lot of Florida folklore, a lot of Florida fake lore is more so what you'll find. Meaning people who have no background in folklore studies or have not done a folklore study perpetuating folklore. That is a thing that happens. But honestly, I think the best thing to do is it can be very helpful to, again, this is where having a cosmology and a background and a worldview comes in, because Florida is one of those really beautiful things where we have a very high population diversity, especially from the Caribbean. And so there's so many different avenues of different spiritualities, different outlooks. We have obviously the lore of the people who are on this land first, the Native Americans who were here before the Spanish. And so Florida is complicated, and but in terms of like spirits and like building a magical practice like from books, I don't necessarily know if you'll find it, but I think what you can do is utilize books like Aaron Oberon's, like even Besomstang and Sword, I think is really helpful for places like here, because even though that's a specific screenshot of their landscape, like you can glean stuff from that, as well as like Jim McGarry's work. And yeah, just be exploratory and build something from that.
Yeah, I'm a huge animist. I'm a huge animist, and I'm just imagining the way that I think about the things that are so unique to Texas or the South, or depending on the state you're in. When I think of Florida, like a lot of times as an animist, I would think of the local spirits being very unique, like to the area. So like I could think of like alligator spirits. So I think of the spirit of the Everglades, spirit of hurricane season. Like that's a huge, like thinking about working with the spirit of a hurricane, because there are certain areas where it's just known that this is a much more high traffic hurricane season. When you want to think about local lore, start getting physical. What's around you? Like, are you in Savannah with those weeping willows and the and the cicadas and the Aya, or are you over, like I feel
That
like,
was perfect.
thank
Thank you.
you. I've been watching a lot of Blanche Devereaux, so yeah, Golden Girls. But like, get local, go to your backyard. Like my great grandparents in Roswell, New Mexico, they had a massive pecan tree in their backyard. It like shaded a whole half of it. It was so huge. I climbed up on it. I built. Like I still think about this pecan tree. I remember literally cracking its nuts and like my great grandpa telling me how to roast them. And it was a very childlike relationship with a tree. But here I am, 36, 17, in my 30s. And I actually I have to check that one. Hold on. In my 30s, and I still remember this tree. So like think about your local landscape. Think about what's really personal to you.
Absolutely.
What about, okay, this is interesting. How has being so public about your craft impacted your lives and relationships?
Do you want to go first?
Sure. I'd like to say for the better, I do keep it for the most part separate from my daily job. Most of them know what I do, but I just don't talk about it a whole lot. When I bring it up, sometimes I'm even kind of quick to, finalize the discussion. Like I'm not going to sit here and lie about anything, but I don't throw words around like witchcraft and whatnot. I'm very, very gatekeepy about that portion of my life when it comes to my professional space at work. Now, what's interesting is some of them I read my book. Some of them listen to the podcast or follow me on social media. That's totally fine. I'm not trying to separate the two gigantically. But when it comes to my impact to my life and my relationships, I've been able to help out people in my life that wouldn't have had any other means besides magical. So that's been wonderful. I'm lucky to have a family that either acts like they don't give two shits or really just don't give two shits, for the most part, I would say, which is really nice. I will say my wards from my home are really intense because being public means people who don't like me. I have unfortunately made some friends to enemies over the years, and I know that I know better now. And I'm grateful for what I have learned because I wouldn't have if I hadn't been public about parts of my practice or what I'm willing to share. Yeah, I think that's it. What do you think?
Yeah, it's impacted my life for the better. But that
You built a
also,
whole business.
yeah, and that was, from needing to, and also like I've made, really good friends, really close friends. It's opened doors to other spiritual systems, other things that I never would have like learned before. So it's been really good, and it's all due to the way that I've we will say, and the girls who know, and the girls who get it, like Bane X Bramble was never just meant to be an Instagram page, and it did have a purpose from the start, and so. Yeah, it's cute, and that's all I can say on that. This one I think is really interesting. Do you ever get
Yes.
tired of being a witch, like burnt out? What keeps you going?
First, no, I don't. I love being a witch. I wanted to be a witch. I wanted to be a witch since I was a small child. I literally remember in second grade, we were given a project to draw a picture of what you want to be when you grow up. And I drew a picture of myself with a cloak and a hood flying on a broom. And when I went up front, my teacher looked at me and she was like, "What is this?" And I panicked. I didn't know what to say. So I said, the first thing that came to my mind was, I want to be an actor. And so I drew myself like one of the witches from Hocus Pocus.
I remember you telling me about
I did.
that.
I told you that, but like, this is something I've wanted to be since I was a child. The fact that I now actually get to have a portion of my profession include witchcraft, but more so from an author's perspective, I think that's amazing. That's wonderful. I love it. I never get tired of it. But do I get burnt out? I don't think I get burnt out because I'm a very diverse person in my life. Most of my friends, I don't discuss witchcraft with them. So I can do as much or as little talking about or immersing myself in witchcraft as I want. I am not a daily meditator. I am not a daily spell caster. I am not a, these are my seven rituals I do every day. So if I did, I would absolutely be burnt out.
I don't get burnt out of what I do, and I don't get burnt out of being a witch, but I do get burnt out, A, being like making it, or like I get burnt out of social media mostly, and I get burnt out of
Yes.
doing like the business side of it in the way that like it does still have to be like this is my full-time job, it pays my bills and things like that. And don't be mistaken, I mean, in that way, it has pushed me and done so many wonderful things for what I do, but that also doesn't mean that when your magic becomes wrapped up in many ways, not all the whole thing, but a lot of your magic comes wrapped up in making sure that you can pay your electricity bill, that can it can be a lot. So I don't get burnt out of being a witch whatsoever. And I have like a strong fortitude in terms of like being able to talk about it, and I'm always doing magic. Like I'm always I'm oftentimes doing things, A, because I have a business, right? But also, most of my friends are magical practitioners. Most of my, I'm very immersed in a magical world. And yet at the same time, that's not what makes me tired. It's having to make sure to post at the right time, because if I don't post, or the reel doesn't do well, or the photo doesn't do well, then it throws things off in terms of like business stuff, or if I don't do it, then it pushes all my other content down. That's what is very tiring. That's where I get the burnout from, and that can be a lot.
Oh no, I totally agree. So this one's interesting from it's a two it took two squares. What are more specifics about prayer beads that you utilize in your craft? I feel like I'm just saying words when I use prayer beads. I think that's a very experiential thing. There are definitely going to be different ma acts of magic that some will resonate with more than others. I think that's literally how paths are journeyed when it comes to this sort of stuff. For me, I'm very inspired with beads, chanting on beads in a similar fashion that like a Catholic might do a rosary. I think that there is a spiritual connection to repetition, to trance work. Personally, if you do not find yourself falling into a relaxed state of trance work very easily, repeating things on a beads might not speak to you. When I do the beads, a lot of times it involves maybe a four-line rhyming chant that's calling upon one of my familiars and from my spirit court. And I'll start with one bead and I will literally say it for every single bead as I'm focusing on a sigil in this candle. And the sigil carrying the message that I want, right? So if I'm doing this, I'm saying these words over and over and over again to the point where I don't need to look at my book and read it anymore because it's just flowing off the tongue. In fact, it's flowing off the tongue so fast that it's starting to sound like gibberish. The words stop making sense. It's like saying fork over and over and over again. Eventually, it's going to sound weird. By the time I get to the end, my vocal cords are sore. I've been speaking something so fast. My mind is literally kind of wandering into that in-between state, and I'm kind of shocked. I'm like, oh, wait, how did I get here? How long have I been doing this? It's sort of a let go sort of moment. And that's when I'm kind of entering that trance-like experience, that state. And that's the funneled energy I'm putting into it that I'm building up on the beads, kind of the way that some people might do a cone of power situation where they're dancing around a circle with their group, building a momentous amount of power. It's no different than someone, say, with drums, building power with drums, building power with, sounding bowls or guitar or singing or just chanting. I feel like there are a lot of things that can be done in this way, and working with chanting on beads is one of those ways to connect with a spirit, to build power with it, concentration, trance work. If that's not working for you, hey, beads may not be your thing. But I do want to ask, what is the difference between lighting a candle and saying an incantation and sang a chant over beads? Both of them, you're just saying words. If that's what it feels like, that's what it feels like. But I'm not sure what the difference would feel like. If you feel that way about beads, why wouldn't you feel that way about any other incantation-based spellcraft? There's got to be some extra work that goes in there, whether that's mental, whether that's communicational, whether that's before you can call a spirit, you got to say hi. Does it know you? Have you given any offerings? Have you made a relationship? Have you made any deals? So keep that in mind when it comes to understanding what you're calling. I know in my book, I have a whole section about calling the different elements. Are you lighting some incense when you are calling on air? Are you lighting a fire when you're calling on fire? Are you sprinkling some water? Like, what type of offering, what type of thing are you building? You don't have to do all of that. Maybe you already did it the first time you made introductions, but I do think that it is more than just saying something, but you have to let your spirit, your mind, your body get into it, if that makes sense. Okay, so this one might be just directly for you. Where can I purchase the theme song? I need it. I always sing along to the Man in Black, preferably a long version, like a 20, 30 minute one for ecstatic body movement trance. Are you going to start selling on SoundCloud?
Yeah, my SoundCloud rapper Spotify handle. I don't think there will be. I mean, if you would like to take on the task of screen recording our podcast intro and putting it on a loop and playing it for personal use, have at it. I won't be mad. For personal use. I love making sound is something that's really, really cool for me. It's only something I do in my free time. It's nothing that I intend to monetize or even do any to put any more effort than like the sudden need of like, oh, I enjoy doing this thing and I have free time, which is almost never. I'm sorry to say, but thank you for your interest.
How do you, we just talked about skepticism already, but how do you get past skepticism or doubt in your own craft?
I think that, and this is why I say like we don't just one day absolve ourselves from secularization within the Western world that's ingrained because it's very much trained out of us at a very young age, and we go through most of our life having that reinforced. Like even you really not wanting to talk about it, which is fine. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I wouldn't either. But like the way that you aren't able to talk about it, or the way that you shouldn't talk about it or can't talk about it at your job is somewhat even a reinforcing of this scientific materialism that is very pervasive in our evangelical culture. So all that is to say, how do you get past it is not just like one day it's going to click on for you. It is a constant process of becoming because, again, we live in a society that is secularized and has trained us to be secular. So the only thing that you can do is like, is your magic working? Are you having experiences? And if so, then you have to trust in what you're doing. And in those moments where you don't trust, I don't have an answer for you. Because again, it's not something that just suddenly like you've eradicated your own functionality of scientific materialism in your everyday life. Like it's just something that you have to continuously work through and get past, in my opinion. And also being skeptical isn't a bad thing.
Absolutely not. I'm a huge believer in safe skepticism. I don't think you should approach everyone as if they're lying to you, but the same, but, you know,
Right.
but I mean, like, approach things with a healthy level of being okay with the fact that maybe this won't work. If it does, fantastic, excellent. But usually, if I'm working magic, it's because it's my, it's because I've, it doesn't, it's not always a last resort. That's not true. But usually by the time that I am needing magic to help me, like needing it, if it, because I have had situations where like this didn't work. And it may be that I, you know, need to revise the spell, revise how I'm doing the magic. It may be that there are already things in play for me. So I totally agree with you. Is your magic working? That's a great sign right there. Do you feel like my magic, I think it's working. I'm getting results. It's not always coming the way that I think it is. And sometimes it gets really around in a weird way. But I guess it is working. That's also confirmation, in my opinion. And I think that's actually where most of the question comes from. Personally, for me, I got to a point where I'm like, I either believe in what I do or I don't. I kind of had to, I made it because I talked this with a friend of mine once, and I was just like, do you ever sometimes feel like just I question sometimes my experiences, especially when I'm fighting with what you're describing as this like militarized secularism and quote unquote reality. And ultimately I came to a point where like, I believe in what I'm doing. And I stuck with that decision, especially when most of my experiences back me up.
Yeah, absolutely. At some point it is just helpful to be like, well, either you're doing it and you agree with it, or I guess believe in it. I don't know. I think the way of like belief and never mind. But yeah, it's good to just like confront with that and be like, it also doesn't have to look. I think that we have a bad habit, especially in the West, of expecting magic to look very particular or looking very fantastical always. And while there is like really powerful experiences that you can have, like something that I think really is interesting is we have to integrate the reality of like magic is a tool. Magic is something to help you to engage with your reality. So therefore, if you're not, that doesn't mean that you're escaping reality. That doesn't mean that you're escaping into something else that it isn't. But it's like, okay, if I did a thing, like if I did magic or turned out a spirit or whatever, and the thing happened and I got the result, then did it work? Regardless of the other factors, did it work? And that's oftentimes all you have to ask yourself is, did it work? And if it did, cool. And if it hasn't happened yet, maybe wait a little longer. And if it didn't happen, go back to the drawing board. Also, divination is helpful for that.
Absolutely. I would 100% agree with that. Should we do one more question before we close out? I think this is a great closing question. What would you say to yourself at the beginning of y'all's practices?
What would you say?
You know, I actually think I would be very gatekeepy about it, because personally, I think I truly needed to experience a lot of the things that I did. And if there were any like warnings or advice that I had given, I would be very, very nervous about changing that trajectory. Many of the things that I think I have learned within my spiritual practice only came to me. This sounds a little redundant. It didn't come to me only through trauma and only through hardship. That was a big part of it. But I also don't think I'd be where I am if I hadn't experienced those things. So I would be very, very careful about the advice that I would give. I think the best advice that I can give to any new practitioner starting, and I said this before, I'll say it again, literally till the cows come home. It is not a race. There is no rush. This has been a super fun Q&A. We got to do one of these a year, I think. This is, I think, or at least every other year, we should definitely do it.
Yeah, I enjoy doing them.
You've been listening to Southern Bramble, a podcast of Crooked Ways. I'm Marshall, the Witch of Southern Light. You can find me on Instagram, TikTok, and Threads at Witch of Southern Light. Check out the link trees and all of my bios. And please buy my book, Cunning Words, A Grimoire of Tales and Magic. You can find it on Amazon. I am an independently published author. So that means that when you buy my book, you are supporting me directly. Thank you so, so, so much for that. I am my own PR person, my own marketing, and my own manager. So, if you have your favorite metaphysical stores or bookstores, my book is also available on Ingram Spark. Tell your metaphysical shops, tell your witch shops, your occult shops, you want to see Cunning Words in their store. They can order it on the Ingram Spark catalog. If you are anti-Amazon, that's totally cool too. You can also buy the black and white version at barnesandnoble.com.
And I'm Austin Bain, X Bramble on Instagram. You can sign up and register for my class, The Infernal Menagerie, Witchcraft with fantastic spirits. I had to think about that. My own title. We'll be diving into the exploratory realms of conjuring, pacting with, and seering, or a seership of elemental spirits of the earth, air, fire, and water, including things such as the salamanders, sylphs, gnomes, and undines, as well as mermaids, griffins, harpies, and the like. So please, if you would enjoy, if that sounds like something you would enjoy, sign up. And you can also find me both doing lectures at Salem Witch Fest and Botanica Obscura, both in March. I hope to see you there. Southern Bramble is a patron-supported podcast. We'd like to thank our patron supporters by name, Witch Rafa, V, Tracy, Timothy, the Witch of Patapsco Forest, the Modern Babylon, the Lady Ghost, Shanna, Nico, Lisa, Keith, Key, Johnny, John, Jens, Jennifer, Jennifer Squared, Jamisa, Giles, Colby, Callie, Ariella, and Addity. Thank you all so much for your patron support.